next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Everyone, thank you for listening in this evening. Today with me, I'm Rebecca Guyette, Program Director at the University YMCA, filling in for Steve Shoemaker, who is out. Our guest today is Hugh Phillips, Director of El Centro por los Trabajadores, which serves the Latino migrant worker community of Champaign County. He'll be talking with us today about El Centro and the wonderful work they do. I guess let's get started, Hugh, by maybe saying a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with this.
Okay, well, thank you, Rebecca. I'm from Los Angeles, California, born 1933, a long time ago, and I lived in the barrio in East L.A. And when I was 14, I went to Santa Barbara, California, and studied to be a Franciscan priest. And I stayed there 10 years, and then I decided that was not for me. But in the meantime, I had gotten a very good education, and I came out and I taught for 43 years in archdiocesan schools, high schools primarily, in Los Angeles. And during the 70s, actually 11 summers altogether as a volunteer, I worked in the San Joaquin Valley with Cesar Chavez, and I would help him. I became very close with him and brought him communion during his fasts and things of this nature. So I've always had a love for Latino causes, and actually I was born in a Latino neighborhood, and so I have that in me. I came here in 1992 to help my brother in Dayton, Ohio. On the way back, I had remembered I knew some people in Champaign, Illinois, and so I pulled over and I went out to Fisher, Illinois, which is out here about 30 miles, and sure, with a Mennonite family. And they were helping in the sanctuary movement at that time for Guatemalan refugees escaping from persecution and killing in Guatemala. And they had a sanctuary movement here with St. Mary Church, with Father Royer, with Claire Zoak from Channing Murray Foundation and the Illinois Disciples Foundation. And they would bring people here and keep them and then take them into Canada. This is the sanctuary movement that predates me by many, many years. So I started to stay here for a little while, and then it stayed on and stayed on. I'm still here. And after a while, they sort of drafted me to do some of the work because of knowing a little bit of Spanish and so forth. And one night I was called to Carl Hospital. There was a worker who had an extremely high temperature, and they could not communicate with him, mm-hmm, for him to explain to them what was wrong. It turned out he had infectious herpes, which he had contracted here. And so there were about 49 migrant workers in a peony farm outside Champaign. And so the Champaign County Health Department on Neal Street asked me if I would go out and bring them in one at a time so we could test them. So I did that just as because I was not working and so forth. One thing led to another, and they convinced me that there were about 500 workers at that time, 1995. So would I try to put something together to help these people since I had more or less retired? Mm-hmm. So that's how El Centro came about, mainly on health items. And then after a very short time, we realized that as this population was growing, they had more than health needs. Mm-hmm. They needed a place to stay. They needed some help in English. They needed some help with legal items. They had many things. So we found out that the good start in health was great, but we could help them in many more things. And part of that was that I was not a doctor, an attorney, or whatever, but I could find the resource in the community to help them. And so that's how we got started. And so I went to United Way to find out how I would organize something.
Sure.
And they put me in touch with a lady called Jenna Finch, and she is still very active here. And she helped me put this together. And we took it back, and one of the things they said at United Way was, well, if you're going to start an organization and you have it here on paper, it's going to be totally voluntary. You're never going to make it. Mm-hmm. Well, 11 years later, we're still here. Mm-hmm. We have no paid employees. I'm not paid. Everyone is a volunteer. And we always have 60 to 65 bilingual volunteers helping with ESL English, helping with interpreting, translating, helping in the office, picking up people, and so forth. So that's how El Centro started. And it started with an idea that it did not want to be here forever. Our goal was to identify problems and help the Latinos here, first of all, help themselves, and secondly, to get organizations like Francis Nelson Clinic, Carl Hospital, Covenant Hospital, the schools, and so forth, as this population was growing, and as they had openings in their particular agencies, mm-hmm. would they please consider hiring a bilingual person? And so that took many years, of course. And the idea was so they would not be as reliant on us for interpreting and so forth. Same with the courts. In the early days, we went to court.
Mm-hmm.
Now the courts have court-appointed interpreters, and they furnished them. They didn't for the first 4 or 5 years of this last 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things we were aiming for have occurred. And as workers come here, they're able to tell, like, if one gets sick or if there's a problem with a house or this or that. Very often they do call us, but very often they can show their neighbor from our resource guide that we provide, a guía de recurso, that they are agencies here to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So that is sort of how we got started, and that was sort of our aim, not to become a great organization, but to become one that was very, very narrow and also that was had very definite goals. And if you see there on our brochure, our mission statement is to help all Latino migrant workers, regardless of their legal status. Okay, that's a very key word. Because of that, we are very poor.
Mm-hmm.
We are very limited in how we can get funds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can get into that later about the fundraising and that type of thing. But as far as that is sort of how we were born.
Mm-hmm.
We're born out of a need. We didn't create it and then put it on top of people. People came and needed some help, and we figured out what we could do.
With just volunteers, does the organization, is it able to run full time? I mean, is this something that is going on 40 hours a week, or how?
We are open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. We never close.
My.
We never close. So we're open all the time. We are open to the phone. Very rarely do you get a message line. There's somebody answering the phone. Now, since we left the university campus where we were for the first 4 or 5 years, we're over on Springfield Avenue, just near Lincoln, and it's in my home.
Mm-hmm.
It's called La Casa Naranjada. It's a very orange house in this little Mexican court. And people know to stop there on the way to and from work, or if they get an emergency or whatever it is, they know they can stop and there's someone there to talk to.
Oh.
So we never close.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the migrant farm worker community in Champaign-Urbana. Are you extending your help outward besides this community? And I know that El Centro resides in Urbana, and I know that the predominant population that you're serving is here in Champaign-Urbana. Are they individuals who are here year-round? Are they seasonal workers?
Okay, well, that's a very good question. When we started in 1995 and prior, possibly the previous 10 years, you just said it. When people thought of a migrant worker, they thought of a migrant farm worker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the majority of the 10 million workers in the United States today are not farm workers. They're working in the cities. There are 1 million Mexicans in Chicago. They're not farm workers. The majority, about 5,000 in Champaign County, are not farm workers. The farm workers used to be the majority of the what we called migrant workers.
Mm-hmm.
We call them now either migrant farm workers or migrant urban workers. Now, if you look around in Champaign-Urbana, every restaurant, hotel, and so forth, the work is being done by Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're still migrant workers. They came here to make a living. Most intend to go back to their country. They do not intend to stay here. But transient, temporary migrant could mean 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. But they're saving money, supporting a family here and in Mexico or Guatemala or wherever it is, and they intend to go back. Most do not want to stay in the United States.
Okay.
Some will. Some will, especially those who come and start families here and so forth. Then it sort of happens that very often they end up staying here.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the workers who are working here, not all, but most, probably 75% are young men mm-hmm. between the ages of 16 and 26. And they're coming here to support their brothers and sisters. And this is what we call real family values, mm-hmm. not the one you hear about. This is real living family values. Very often, that's what I say. My volunteers will tell me when asked, when I ask them, what did you get out of being a volunteer? Because you gave a lot. Did you get anything? And they said the example of these people of family values is what helped them continue in the work, because they saw that they were giving up. They're very lonely here. They're very depressed very often. They've given up everything to come to make sure their family back home is surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a great calling.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you said there's 5,000 in Champaign
County.
Champaign County.
We have about 1,000 of that 5,000 are in the Rantoul area.
Okay.
Now, that will be about 500 to 1,000 will come in about 2 weeks and stay all summer to detassel the corn.
Okay.
Those are our migrant farm workers.
Okay.
They're here temporarily mm-hmm. for about 2 to 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a migrant Head Start program for them. We have a migrant school, a Busey school, that helps these people. And as I mentioned to you before we started, we're collecting clothes and toilet articles and various things for these families when they get here
mm-hmm.
because they live in their cars.
Mm-hmm.
And these families are not undocumented workers. These are people who live in Texas primarily, and they travel 3 months here, 3 months there, and so forth.
For the summer.
Right. And well, for other times of the year, too.
Okay. It's
seasonal, as you have mm-hmm. in your questions. It's seasonal, and the season here is summer. The season somewhere else is something else.
Oh, sure.
So they're traveling around the country. But most of them live in their cars with their families. And they are American citizens. They're paying mm-hmm. taxes. So they're eligible for, like, emergency food stamps and so forth,
mm-hmm.
whereas the undocumented workers are not eligible for these. And they wouldn't need them anyway because they do have jobs.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so we have two groups there.
Now, when you say that some of them are living in their cars, do we have any type of residencies? Is there anything set up for these individuals?
Right, right. Yes, we do. I'm saying they're living in their cars as they're traveling.
Sure.
Okay. Now, when they get here, yes, we have seed companies like Pioneer Seed, GARS. These are the big conglomerate companies that are growing the crops. And they provide some sort of summer housing for them.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be extremely poor.
Yes.
And then we have fought for that. We have called in the Department of Labor, the Department of Health, and they have condemned various parts. It's now part of the site of the air base at Rantoul. The housing there mm-hmm. is being used. We have motels here. We even have apartments on campus that are vacated in the summer being used temporarily.
Oh.
So there is some.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's still needs a lot of improvement. When I worked with Cesar Chavez, I worked in the migrant camps, which were, you cannot even describe how awful they were in the mm-hmm. 70s. But hopefully we have gotten rid of most of the migrant camps in this county. But now these migrant farm workers go all the way to the Indiana border, to Danville, Hoopston, and so forth. Then we have the Migrant Head Start program for the little babies to 5 years old who go to Hoopston and Rantoul.
Okay.
But the rest of the children up to about 12, 13, or 14 go to Busey School for this migrant program. But children are working in the fields as young as 12.
Mm-hmm. Now, these children, did those of them, let's say a family comes and is working from September to November, and they have school-age children. Do they just get enrolled in the most local school, or is the different school program set up?
Okay, the ones who are here all year round,
mm-hmm.
the bulk
mm-hmm.
at the moment, they're enrolled in Champaign, Urbana schools, Rantoul schools, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
They are enrolled, and there are programs, and those schools, it took a few years for this to take hold, but they even have TAs and other people that help who are bilingual and so forth. But the ones who travel, the seasonal ones who travel around the United States, they enroll in the local school, or as we have here, we have a summer program for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Busey School.
Oh,
it's run by the Champaign Schools in conjunction with the department in Springfield that deals with seasonal workers.
Okay.
And so that they will, then from here in September, they may go back to Texas or they may go to North Carolina and do strawberries or whatever they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Are most of the seasonal employees members of, we're talking about, you were mentioning workers' rights, are most of them members of the United Farm Workers the unions?
Yes. That's sort of a mixed blessing. As mm-hmm. I said, I worked with Cesar Chavez for those that number of years. I also would march with him when helping to establish the United Farm Workers when we had the bumper stickers, Uvas, no grapes, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And we have people here from the YMCA and other agencies on campus who send groups to San Juan, Texas, and other places to work with the United Farm Workers during spring break. And so people get an idea of this. The United Farm Workers have come a long way. However, the labor laws of the United States, as they, impale on the all workers, not just Latino workers, have changed very little over the last years.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they can work in the fields 40, 50, 60 hours a week. It'll be straight pay. There won't be any overtime. They're not entitled to benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still not. So they're still working for rights. If you think about it, in the United States, if we regress a moment to the farm worker part mm-hmm. of this, in the history of the United States, from the very beginning, the people who harvest our food, the most important part of our whole sustenance,
mm-hmm.
okay, are paid the least and treated the worst. From the beginning of our history to the Civil War, slaves. After the Civil War to the First World War, it was by the same people, but they were economic slaves.
Mm-hmm.
They really weren't better off. From the First World War to the Second World War, a phenomenon took place in the Midwest. I'm from Los Angeles. And we used to, when I was growing up, I would hear people point to some of these white people and call them white trash. They're Okies and Arkies. They're from mm-hmm. Oklahoma and Arkansas, from the Dust Bowl of the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
They harvested our food. When the Second World War came, they escaped. And they were able to go to get work in the shipyards and during the munitions of the Second World War. So they got out of that lifestyle. Since then, it has been mainly Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sort of trapped in this lifestyle, those who get into it. It's mm-hmm. sort of hard to get work your way out of it. So those who in the migrant farm worker part of it and with the unions, Cesar Chavez saw what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons, like our name, El Centro por los Trabajadores, we use the word trabajador for a worker, not campesino, not something else. Because Cesar Chavez figured when he would look at the workers, he had grown up from the boy as a worker. And he said, we cannot raise ourselves up until we get a better image of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know that people look down on us. We can't look down on ourselves. He said, you are not, and he didn't mean this is a bad word, you are not peons, you're not campesinos, you are trabajadores.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your father is a mechanic, or your father is a doctor, your father is a janitor, your father is a dentist, all work mm-hmm. is necessary for society. All work has dignity. And the work that you're doing in the with the grapes or wherever it is, that is high dignity. And you have to think of yourself as performing a very important function in society. However, society still hasn't caught up with that.
Certainly. And I, you mentioned the students from RY that go down to San Juan and work over spring break, and I want to thank you personally because these are the students that I work with, and they're incredibly impacted by this experience. I think that going down there and then they come back and do and then come over to El Centro, mm-hmm. and many of them follow up and continue to be volunteers mm-hmm. because it's such an incredible experience for them, and I think it's very eye-opening and it's very educational, which is obviously the intent of these alternative service trips that they go on. I just want to reintroduce our guest. With us today, we have Hugh Phillips, director of El Centro por los Trabajadores, which is in Urbana and is a center working for the Latino migrant worker community of Champaign County. I'd like to invite listeners to call in with questions or comments. If you are outside of the Champaign-Urbana community, you can call 1-800 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Within the Champaign-Urbana community, you can call 333-9455. Again, and I'd like to thank Hugh Phillips for being with us. We were just talking about the students that go on these trips, individuals that are learning about this community every day. Who are your volunteers? Who are they? Mostly people from the community? Are they people from the university? Who do you have, and how are they recruited?
Well, when we first started in 1995, we didn't have anyone, obviously. So I had to sort of advertise what I was looking for. Fortunately, the university was here, okay? So I did get many students from the Spanish department or the ESL department or other departments, or I would even get professors from some of those departments who were either volunteers or came onto our board of directors. And so after 2 or 3 years of that, they would tell their friends that they were doing this, or they would be in a class and they would take a class. So probably for the last 7 or 8 years, I have never advertised for volunteers. I get more very often than I need, and some I'm able to shift some of those to other organizations, such
wonderful.
As in Rantoul and other places where they need them. But most are students, not all. Some are in the community, and they don't have to speak Spanish. In other words, part of what we do, ESL, teaching English as a second language, we use a form where you do not use Spanish to teach English.
Oh.
So very often, if I have a native speaker, sometimes they do not make the best teacher because they cannot be still in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And ESL is taught the way you and I learned our own languages. We parroted what we heard.
Oh, sure.
So that is ESL. And we do that one-to-one for 1 hour a week. They're not in a class.
Okay.
We have 42 people currently taking ESL one-to-one with one teacher, one student. So when they get that hour, it's very special because we have this young man who may have come in yesterday knowing no English. We have another fellow who's been here 2 or 3 years. They're at different levels so that teacher can zero in where that person is.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have 25 persons in his class at 25 different levels and try to teach to this middle. So it's all private tutoring, and it works very well. And we had Melanie Waters, who's in charge of and our board for many years. She's in charge of the TAs at the Spanish department at the university. She developed our ESL program, which has been cited by La Raza and other places for its how it works. And it's survival English. We're not teaching formal grammar. We're not teaching verb forms and so forth. We're teaching survival verbal English. And if they get so proficient and they're here a long time, well, then we zero them in on Urbana Adult Ed or Parkland for GEDs and other things. And so some do that and some just the movement is in and out. So it depends on the individual person. But we do feel that it's important that they do some ESL.
Okay. We have a caller on line two. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I was wondering if Mr. Phillips could comment on the new Pope and his policies towards contraception and how perhaps this affects not only the Latino community but also the community at large in the U.S.
I think I know who that caller is. I do have strong feelings on the matter, and I may step on some toes by citing this. I do feel that, and I know that there is a spread of AIDS in Mexico and Guatemala. There's a spread of AIDS here. There's a spread of infectious diseases, sexual diseases. We have untold trauma in Africa, people dying. And so I do feel that being a Catholic myself, I do feel the church has to reassess its views on use of condoms. And so I think that, unfortunately, the new pope holds to the old line. In fact, he just reasserted that in Africa, those people, that they just have to learn if they want to control things, they'll just have to do without sex.
We have another question. Caller on line one. Caller, go ahead with your question.
Hello. Yeah, I'm sorry I don't have anything particularly enlightening to ask, except for I was so excited to hear that you're from East L.A. So I had to call and ask if you knew Whittier Boulevard and given when you were born, if you had ever heard of Maury's Bike and Key Shop.
Yes, I have. And I was born in 1933.
And
at that time, Los Angeles was a very white city. And if you know, they had the statistics last week with the new mayoral election that Los Angeles is now 48% Latino, 31% Caucasian, and the rest are other minority groups. And Whittier Boulevard, of course, goes back many, many years, goes all the way through L.A., all the way out into the city of Whittier, which is further inland. And I have taught schools in Compton, Torrance, Huntington Park, Linwood, and various other parts of the what we would call the inner city today. So I don't know if the caller is goes back as far as I do. I go back, obviously, 72 years. But Los Angeles has changed until now. It's probably one of the most diverse cities in the world.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it. I always enjoy when I meet people from the Champaign who are now in the Champaign-Urbana community and find an ally from their original home areas. But getting back to the seasonal workers, those that come from September or from, let's say, for the summer, they come from June to August. Do you, now you've been doing this for 11 years, are you seeing the same individuals returning year after year? Or is it different groups? I mean, do we have families that continuously come back to Champaign, Urbana, filling any ties?
Yes, there's both. The majority come back year after year after year, and they bring their whole family because after the age 12, the whole family can work in the fields.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's our labor law. And we have good programs for them, the Migrant Head Start, the Migrant School, and various other programs that help them. We have many churches and organizations such as El Centro who try to fill in the gap as well as possible. There are new people each year, but there are people who have done this for many, many, many years. And every once in a while, I'm very pleased when some family will decide to stay and try to take up and get out of that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really no-winner. To give you an example, last summer I went to DHS to get some food stamps,
mm-hmm.
which they can get them for an emergency food stamps. So they
mm-hmm.
are entitled to them. And going in there, the lady asked me, there was mother and father and I think three or four children, and she wanted to see all their birth certificates. And they didn't have them. And I said, I don't carry my birth certificate. Why do you have to see their birth certificates? Well, that's a requirement we have here in our program. I said, well, you know, these people live in their car. They don't have a file cabinet in there. They don't keep all these documents. They need to eat today. They need emergency food stamps. So I caused my voice was raising, so the supervisor came out and said, give him what he wants so he can get him out of here. But and you shouldn't have to do that.
Sure.
People should not have
sure.
to bend to that. They have they're entitled to emergency food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, and I see you have questions later about the real ID, this idea of identifications and so forth causes many problems.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the labor laws, and currently that individuals 12 and older can work. When I was in college, we had a great deal of students who were recruited to come to college. That was in Northwest Ohio at Bowling Green State University. We recruited in the Valley on the Texas border, and so we would bring individuals, students up, and many of them I found, this definitely indicated my ignorance, were individuals my age who had spent their summers doing migrant farm work themselves. And I was very affected by this when I found out about this. And these are individuals who are my age. I thought this was something that was, mm-hmm. you know, how do you feel about that personally? I mean, what are your I know you see the need amid the families, and I began to learn that myself, that sometimes there just is no option for these individuals. But I think about what I spent my summers doing, and what my peers that I met from Texas spent their summers doing, and how different their upbringing and their childhood was, and what that might have taken away from their own development. What are your thoughts on that?
You mean how low it goes, you mean? And then
that 12-year-olds can do this.
Well, it does bother me. Unfortunately, it is a necessity in many cases, and that's one of the reasons they bring the children along.
Mm-hmm.
In a really beautiful world, we wouldn't have that, hopefully. And that's part of the lack of social justice that we have in our hemisphere and all over the world, perhaps. But we really have it here. And that for survival, much of that is necessary. Very often, young people, when they were teenagers and so forth, worked. Some needed the money. Some did it to have extra money. And there were various reasons why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people who are working in the fields at young ages, and there was a time, 25 and 30 years in this country, they could work at age 8, and they were working in the fields. Cesar Chavez worked from the age of 8.
Mm-hmm.
So those things have happened. They've come up somewhat. But the thing is, we have to realize that they're being paid a very minimal wage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very often people are doing the work someone else will not do.
Sure.
And so the farm workers are part of that. Mm-hmm. And then we have the problems where very often they're not even paid for the work they do.
Absolutely.
We've had many problems with this in California, in the San Joaquin Valley, with wineries,
mm-hmm.
where people are work for 2 or 3 or 4 months. Then they're turned into immigration after 2 or 3 months, and they knew all along they were undocumented because they brought them up themselves
exactly.
from Mexico. And then they turn them into immigration, and then they don't pay them for the work that they did. So these people, as I said earlier, for some reason in our society, the people who perform in the migrant farm workers, the people who perform one of the most basic, essential jobs in our society, that of raising our food and harvesting our food, are treated so poorly and paid so poorly. I mean, that's really a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. This is Rebecca Guyette on Keeping the Faith, in for Reverend Dr. Steve Shoemaker. I'm here today with Hugh Phillips, director of El Centro por los Trabajadores, which is over in Urbana. Just a few announcements on behalf of the University YMCA. Our Dump and Run program is currently ongoing. We are in the collection stage. So if you are interested in making a donation, collections are being accepted from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday through June 3rd at the University YMCA at 1001 South Wright Street. We are not accepting any large appliances, stoves, washers, dryers, any large exercise equipment, any non-working appliances, but are accepting items in good to excellent condition, including clothing. We also are in need of some volunteer help to help sort and pack and load our items onto the truck for our big sale, which happens at the Stock Pavilion in August. We need volunteer help this week from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday and Tuesday. If you are interested and able to help, just show up at the University Y. We're happy to have all volunteers who would like to help. We're also getting ready to start our Summer Community Program, which is an open university program, non-credit, non-graded courses, some offered for fees, most fees at a nominal cost. We have ballroom, Taibo, martial arts classes. They will begin June 20th, Monday, June 20th. The class schedule will be up by early June. If anyone is interested, we encourage individuals from the community to join. Classes take place mostly during the evenings, Monday through Thursday. Parking is available at metered spots on the street and limited parking at the University Y. Again, I'm here today with Hugh Phillips, director of the El Centro por los Trabajadores in Urbana, which serves the Latino migrant worker community of Champaign County. I'd like to encourage callers with questions or comments. If you are outside the Champaign-Urbana community, you can call 1-800-222-9455. Within the Champaign-Urbana community, you can call 333-9455. Again, that's 1-800-222-9455, and in the CU community, 333-9455. We were just talking about the labor laws and how 12-year-olds are now allowed to the youngest that can work are 12-year-olds. And you had mentioned before that there's a Head Start program for the young children up to 5 years old, and then there's the school at Busey for the individuals who are between the ages of 5 and I think you said 12 to 13.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any type of programming done in the Champaign-Urbana community for families who have teenagers, who bring their teenagers, who do not want their teenagers to work? And is there any type of program that we offer for those maybe between the ages of 12 to 13 up until 18 years old?
Well, in that area, 12, 13, 14, 15, they can go to Brucey.
Oh, okay.
Okay. If they're older than that or if they're that age and they there's nothing besides going to school or working,
mm-hmm.
okay, those things exist. And in the school, they have many programs.
Okay.
And they're doing very well. We have, and that has been going on for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of misperceptions about the type of individuals that do this type of work and who these individuals are, and unfortunately, there's, I would certainly say, a lot of bias against individuals like this. Before we get to that point, I'll take this next call on line one. Caller?
Hello, yes. I had a question about the workers who get, cheated out of their money and sent back. Is this done with the knowing collusion of the powers that be in that part of the country or even here so that some lawmakers, I'm not branding all of them, but some are kind of happy with the situation? I'll hang up and listen.
Yes, they are. I think this happens with the collusion of local politicians all the way up to the federal government. In San Joaquin Valley, two wineries 30 years ago, and then last summer did the same thing. They imported workers, as I said, worked them from about February through the end of the summer, and then called immigration and said, we just realized they're without documents. They themselves brought them in,
sure.
And then didn't pay them. The worker has a right to be paid for his work, regardless if he is here with documents or not documents. Well, that is known by the federal government. That's known by the Bush administration. And very often, all of this, even the so-called reform that Bush promised and so forth, had to do with what was best for the employers, was to bring workers up for the employers, then you take the workers and you take them back. In other words, there's not a program in sight that really is saying, what do you do with workers? What are their rights? What are you doing for them as a society, bringing them into the society, even if it's temporary? So this, from our point of view, in La Raza, which is the umbrella organization of all the Latino organizations in the United States, that this is an abuse of workers.
Mm-hmm. Getting back, I'm sidetracked now. Getting back to the question that I had asked earlier about the bias against this population, what type of outreach, if any, is being done by El Centro to kind of combat some misperceptions about this population, the type of individuals that do this? For example, are these safe individuals? Are these individuals, is any work being done with the police communities to ensure that these individuals are receiving proper treatment during their time here?
Yes, we've done that from the very beginning. For a number of years, I was on the Citizens Advisory Board with the Chief of Police of Champaign County. I just couldn't keep up with it after a while, but there has been an effort made, and this was working with such problems as racial profiling, mm-hmm. and other things, and there has been some improvement in that regard. There is a policeman in on the Urbana Police Force, Adam Chacon, who has done much work in this area and has tried to, push that through with his fellow policemen and is very knowledgeable in the needs of these people and who they are. From the very beginning, we have part of our agenda through emails, through people on our email list, through our literature and so forth. I speak probably one or two times a week in churches and classrooms, and I've done this for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to alert the people of who these people are,
mm-hmm.
Before you make up your mind of whether they should be here or not, or whether you can help them or not, or whether you want to help El Centro and its work, get to know who the people are. And so, as I said, part of our support comes from many churches and individuals, and that is a result of our going out and trying to explain to the people who they are. They were invisible for many years,
mm-hmm.
and many ethnic groups were, because very often they used to be, and there are still some examples of it, where they are abused by their own ethnic group,
mm-hmm.
And so now they are coming out of the shadows. They're being accepted more. They're going to the library. They're going to other places in the community. You will see them in the shopping malls and so forth. There was a time when they stayed hidden in their homes because they were afraid who was going to knock on their door and who was on the phone.
Exactly.
And so forth. They are here, many, undocumented. But the thing is, in every other way, we hope that they are, and most are, you know, very good citizens.
Absolutely.
Very good people here. And as I said before, they just exude this effervescence of family values that you just cannot believe until you see the Latino family. We talk about it in this country, you know, that so-called Christian right talks about family values, but these people live it every day.
Proud to be a part of one. We have a caller on line one. Caller?
Yes, Hugh, I'm a terrific admirer of the work of you and I guess what can only be called a ministry. It's been too long since I've opened my checkbook, and I'm sure that you'll, before the end of the program, you'll let us know where we can write a check. I think the last time that you and I were together face-to-face, and I'd like you to talk about this, was at a funeral. It was at St. Pat's Parish Center when a migrant worker had died. He was in, well, I would say older gentleman, but older, it's a relative term. Maybe he was only 50, maybe he was 60. This was a farm worker. Maybe it was in Onarga. I don't remember exactly. He had been, I don't know if he was detasseling corn, what it was. He had collapsed in the among the rows of corn. And I think he died just of heat prostration. And I wonder if you would talk to the listeners about the circumstances that the workers find themselves in, and if any improvement has come. And if you, I'm angry at myself because I don't remember the gentleman's name, and he at least deserves to be remembered. So I would appreciate if you could talk about that situation and tell us where we can write a check.
Thank you for bringing that up. That was a horrendous story. That was about 7 years ago, and I was at that time, I was at Canterbury House at the Episcopal Church on Wright Street. They gave us an office. And one day in August, one of the things that, being from California, that I really, really hate about Chef Hader Bada is the humidity in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only just wonder how people can go out and work in the fields in the humidity. Well, one Saturday, this old gentleman, Arturo Mendez, went out with a group in a bus, and they were left there by the supervisor, who is himself a Latino, and they did not leave any water. And when at the end of the day came, there were 18 of them, and only 17 came back to the bus, and they said Arturo was not here. And so the supervisor said, well, you go on into town, and we'll go look for him. Well, they found him 2 days later, dead, dehydrated. He was 57 years old. And when I heard about it, this was with Garst Seed Company, and I called them. They were not going to do anything. And I talked to the supervisor, trying to think of the term that they use, some of the farm workers. And very often those people abuse the workers under them,
mm-hmm.
and that still happens. And they were not going to do anything, so I called on my own. I called a television station, and I went to St. Patrick's Church, and I got Father Rem to agree to have a mass for this young man, I mean this older man, rather, and none of us knowing him at all, but he was a human being, and he was a good person. And on television, I remember saying, some people may have been taken aback, I said, you know, if this man had been a high school student from Danville and he had dropped dead out in the middle of the field, all hell would have broken loose.
Absolutely.
But since he was just an old man, nobody was going to do anything. So Father Rem and I and other people, we brought pressure on the seed company. We had his body taken to San Luis Rey, which is near Oceanside, California, where his family was. He was an American citizen, an old Mexican-American citizen. And the old mission there at San Luis Rey buried him and had a funeral mass for him and so forth. So even though he was not known to us, he sort of personified these workers. They're
That's
out
the
right. there working for food for us. And thank you for bringing that up. I have not forgotten that story. And it's not an exaggeration, and it's not unique. This goes on all the time. I think that Rebecca will probably tell you later about sending a check to El Centro.
Absolutely. I was actually going to get to that right now, and I thank the caller for bringing this up. There's certainly a need, and this is an absolutely vital, vital provision for this community, I think. And so I would like you, if you could talk. The address to El Centro is 4 Buena Vista Court, and that's Urbana, Illinois, 61801. I personally encourage callers to do what they can and to send what they can and to remember the core message at what Hugh is saying, which is that these are individuals who are working for us and providing for us. I'd like to ask you just where the funds come for to run El Centro and what other types of fundraising efforts there are.
Because we are a volunteer organization, we try to keep our funds limited. We have always had free rent. In other words, at first when we started through Jenna Finch, we had the use of Canterbury House at the St. John the Divine. Then we moved next door to the Newman Center where we were for 3 or 4 years. Then the house that I'm using now, I live in the house, and we use that 24 hours a day. So the expense has to do with phones, electricity, insurances, and so forth. We can run El Centro on about $30,000 to $40,000 a year and do all the work we do because we have no paid employees.
Mm-hmm.
And we get our money from a number of sources, first of all through the Community Shares of Illinois, which is a type of payroll deduction. And we're part of that organization. And we also primarily get them. There are about 7 or 8 churches, a variety of churches that help us. And like CUCC, Community United Church of Christ, Grace Lutheran Church, the Channing Murray Foundation, St. Patrick, St. Mary, the First Presbyterian Church. So a number of churches help us. And then it's individuals. We have a donor list that we have been so loyal to us and know that whatever we can get, that is what we use. And so people who give us money know that none of it is going into a building or something else. It's all going to for the work that we're doing. We're trying to serve the migrants in our midst.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the source of our income. And since we do serve documented and undocumented workers, we do not get grants or anything, or nor do we apply or can we apply to government help.
Let's talk a little bit about the Real ID Act. And I know this is an incredibly volatile subject right now for many of us. Could you talk a little bit for the callers who are for the listeners who don't know what it is and what is going on with that situation?
Okay, you're going to get a subjective view, but it's been thought over for a long time.
Two subjective views.
You're right. But the Real ID Act, I think, is a real travesty, and it's a real tragedy. It harks to dictatorships, and it's used, as so many things are used, in the guise of helping our country since 9/11 for terrorists and all these other things, you know, just as racism has really perked up its head in the Champaign-Urbana area very verbally since 9/11. It's almost patriotic to be a racist with people of color. But the Real ID Act is for all people, for you and I and for the Latinos, for the Asians, for everyone is going to have to do this. And the idea is that the driver's license for all 50 states, they all have to have the same guidelines to get it. Your passport or a birth certificate, you have to have your Social Security card, not the number. You have to have the original card, which they will run a check on. And there are two other IDs. One of them is that you have proof that you live where you do and so forth. This is to get the driver's license. If you don't drive, then you have to do the same thing with a state ID. And this will be through all 50 states. And we can be asked to show those at any time. We have to have that on our person. And so the matricular cards and other things from the Consulado de Mexico and all those, they will be null and void. I mean, they can have them, but they're not going to do much for them and for all people. And this was sneaked through last week. It went through the House very quickly. It was attached on a Senate bill for appropriations for the for the funds to fight the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and so it passed 100-0 in the Senate. Even our two Illinois senators voted for it because they could not vote against the appropriations bill. The president signed it last Thursday. No ceremony in the White House, no news, everything. So it's done. And to me, this is one of the most sinister acts in my whole lifetime. So I am very, very volatile about it.
What types of immediate implications do you think this has for our community?
Well, I think that our federal government is fomenting this mistrust of one another. You know, I grew up in, as one of the callers mentioned about in L.A. and so forth, I grew up and I was in elementary school during the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And I would see these movies and everything where you report on your father and your mother and all these different things in Germany. And so it's a great mistrust. And it's done under the guise that we're fighting terrorism. And those of us know, as we go to Mexico or Guatemala or whatever country it is, and we go south, that we treat our southern neighbors so differently than we treat our northern neighbors.
Absolutely.
And yet all the terrorists came in through Canada, mm-hmm. and they didn't come in through Mexico. They didn't come in sweating across the desert and so forth. But anything you want, it seems, you can sell under the guise that you're fighting terrorism. Mm-hmm. And I think that people are not realizing how many rights they're giving up. They're going to wake up one day and realize just how much has been given away.
Makes you question the term land of the free. you mentioned the difference in the way we treat our neighbors. Let's talk about Border Patrol just a bit and what's happened with that since 9/11, the changes in Border Patrol and the current status of that.
Well, for the most part, I'm not speaking about the political ideals of what should be done with the total immigration policy.
Sure.
And migrants. It's a mess, regardless, you know. And 1989, under Ronald Reagan, we had an amnesty. Okay. Now, there are 8-10, depending on who you talk to, what the statistics are, undocumented workers in the United States. And everyone jumps to the conclusion they're all Latinos. But a very high percentage, even here in Champaign-Urbana, are Eastern Europeans.
You say 8-10 million?
Right. We think.
Yes.
Okay. Or the government says. So that's a lot of people. You're going to pick them all up and take them across the border. They're here. You have to deal with reality. And the Eastern Europeans who are here and so forth, they came because they have support groups. Mm-hmm. They came with visiting visas, legitimate, to visit relatives, Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles, all these places, and they stayed. But they have blue eyes and white skin like I do. And so they have a much easier time to blend into the society. And so this whole question of immigration needs to be worked out somewhere. But in the meantime, the people are here. So someone comes knocking on my door, what am I supposed to do? I was a Franciscan for 10 years, lived in a monastery, and people would come to the monastery and knock and ask for food or something, and different monks were at the door. You know, mm-hmm. you took your turn. But right inside the door, there is a sign in all monasteries that says, treat each person who knocks at your door as if it were Jesus Christ. So you're going to say, get out?
Mm-hmm.
I don't ask them how they got here, what is your political belief, and all the other things. If they have a legal need or a need for food or a need for a job and so forth, if it's possible that I can help them,
mm-hmm.
if El Centro can help them in some way, we do,
mm-hmm.
because that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that I admire most in my lifetime are the mentors that I have chosen. And I think all of us need that. We need someone to look up to that has helped us. And as I told you, when I was very young, I fell in love with St. Francis of Assisi, and he worked with the poor. Okay, then I worked with Cesar Chavez. And Cesar Chavez is in line for canonization as a saint. But besides that, if you saw him, he was a person who gave everything and did not ask for anything for himself. And so I think that is part and parcel of our purpose in life, is all of us, as best we can, we must do something for others. We have to serve others. That's the purpose of it. We have to take care of ourselves first, of course. Then the third mentor that I had, and I don't know how much time we have, I was involved in Los Angeles in the early 70s with a teacher union,
mm-hmm.
a Catholic teacher union. and they had a workshop for 3 days. And I was asked to pick up the keynote speaker. And this person was just coming on to the international stage. I did not know very much about the person at all. I was asked to go to LAX, the international airport, to pick up the person. And there were two nuns. So I pick up these two nuns. And I'm taking them on the LA freeways, not to Whittier, as the one woman asked, but to another part of town, and to take her to a convent. And I was in the car, and there was total silence. And so I turned to the nun, and I said, "Sister, where did you just come from?" And she looked at me, and she said, "From the Philippines." And silence. Mm-hmm. So that bothered me, but very often I'm trying to think, what can I say next?
Sure.
So I turned to her again. I said, "Oh, what were you doing there, sister?" And she said, "We were working in one of our leprosariums." And I thought, and, you know, St. Francis of Assisi worked with lepers.
Absolutely.
And so forth. So I said, "Oh, sister," I said, and of course, this I was a 28-year-old person at the time. And I said, "Oh, I really, really respect that. I don't think I could do that, though. I mean, I really respect your doing it. But I don't think I would do that even for $1 million. And she turned to me, and I can still see her eyes glaring at me. And she said, "Young man, I wouldn't do it for $1 million either." And that was Mother Teresa that I found out a short time later. So I've been very fortunate in having great mentors in my life that helped me pursue goals that I find important. And these people are looking for something, and they want to find a community, whether they're Latinos or not Latinos, that do care that they're here.
Is there a limit to the amount of individuals who can serve El Centro? I mean, do you reach a volunteer capacity to which point you no longer can use individuals? And I know you mentioned earlier you've had to direct them away. Currently, is there a higher need in the summer?
There's a higher need in the summer because last week I lost over half of my volunteers because they graduated.
Sure.
And people will say, "Oh, the summer's coming. You can slow it out a bit." The summer is my biggest time.
Sure.
Because I have this influx of these added people with a shorter amount of volunteers. So mm-hmm. I'm very much in need. And if people would email me, they'll be on the email list, and I can send them information. And also, then they can ask what they would like to do, and I can explain to them, and they can look hook onto our website that gives an extensive, through links and other places here locally and so forth, what they can do with us, you know, with us. Because by myself, I can't do anything.
Could I get your, or could you share your email address with us?
Okay, it's all small letters. My name, HUGHPHILLIPS1 at S as in Sam, SBCGLOBAL, SBCGlobal.net. Send it to me. You'll be on my email list, and I'll reply immediately. And please, on two blocks east of Lincoln, on Springfield, the south side of the street, there's a court of 8 Mexican-looking houses. We're the orange one.
I love
it. So please stop by and see us.
This it's very beautiful, vibrant. The first time I saw it, I was greatly intrigued. So I asked my boss, Steve Shoemaker, and he shared with me, "Oh, that's, you know, that's what that is, and that's who's back there." I said, "Oh, I didn't know that." So definitely going to be coming soon. This is, fortunately for me, I our time does slow down.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Words like America and globalization often conjure up images of protest and conflict around the world. It's us versus them. Either you're for us or against us. But things aren't always so black and white. I'm Jim Fleming. In this special edition of To the Best of Our Knowledge, soap opera in China, hip-hop in Africa, and California wine in France. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Programming on WILL is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly clear with a low in the lower 50s and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, increasingly cloudy with a high in the lower 70s and northwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s and north winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.